This is Vatican Radio and I'm Lydia O'Kane. Top climate experts are blaming mankind more than ever as the main cause of global warming. That is the conclusion of a major report by the UN-sponsored Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC, on the state of the world's climate. The final document was approved at the end of a week-long meeting in Stockholm and was released on Friday. The document also says that a recent slowdown in the rate of global warming is unlikely to last and shows that there will be even more heat waves, droughts, floods and a creeping rise in sea levels unless urgent action is taken to cut greenhouse gas emissions. UK-based aid organisation Christian Aid is calling on governments to heed the warnings of the IPCC report. I spoke to the organisation's senior climate change advisor, Dr. Alison Doig.
This report only comes out every 6 years or so, and it is a compilation of all the science, and they only publish what they're fairly certain about. So what is in this report, the scientific community across the globe, and this is an agreed document of scientists and countries across the globe, stating the state of science, scientific knowledge and climate change.
What seems to be most interesting about this is that it's affecting poorer countries. These countries are the ones that seem to be suffering the most.
We're absolutely certain, first, that climate change is happening, that it is man-made. They are almost, you know, certain as scientists will state that it is man-made, and that its impacts will, if we do not aim to stop it in its tracks now, that the impacts of climate change over the coming decades will get much, much worse. Many of these impacts happen quite much more rapidly in the Arctic, but also around the tropics. The other factor is in the north, we are prepared, we have insurance, we have the wealth to respond to climate change. If it gets warmer, we can put cooling in. So these poor countries where the extreme weather is being felt the worst are often the countries that don't have the wealth and the insurance and all the things we would expect to be able to respond. So it's much, much harder for them to respond. So they have a double hit, higher change, but less ability to change, to respond to that change.
We've had so many conferences, meetings about climate change, the international community coming together. You would wonder after more and more reports that the world still faces this kind of situation. Why is that?
The causes of climate change, but the main cause is carbon dioxide emissions, and the main source of carbon dioxide emissions is fossil fuel burning. And all our major economies are based on fossil fuel, whether that's the energy source we have for our transport, for our house heating, for the electricity we produce. But it's also our investment companies, our pension firms are heavily invested in fossil fuels. So it is the foundation currently of our economy. And politicians and those in the private sector are not willing to admit the risk that this foundation of fossil fuel is having on the future. It is already happening, you know, having impacts now, but in the future they will get worse. And really to take the strength and courage to say we need to transform how we get our energy, we need to transform the basis of our economies. So it is quite a fundamental change, but really the urgency needs to get higher up the political agenda. To date, the changes that politicians have been asked to do have allowed them to do green projects around the side, so small changes to how we do things to bring our carbon emissions down. In the future, to really stop climate change, we need to start fundamentally challenging that fossil fuel base that our economy is on, and that's where the political impasse has come. And really, we need the politicians in the next year or two to take that, grasp that by the nettle, and you know, just really make a decision to do something to transform how we get our energy, how we fund our economy into the future, so that we can have a low carbon future.
I mean, you're very blunt in what you say. It's happening. Things that need to be done to sort the situation out. But can we turn the clock back? Can we go back to really repair the damage that has been done?
At the moment, I think we would be aiming to try and halt it in its tracks. There is already a certain amount of climate change, of global warming, that will happen, even if we stopped everything now. So we need to rapidly stop what is already in line to happen. And I say it really is happening now already. We talked to, with the work with Christian Aid, our partners, we talked to farmers, for example, in Malawi, and they say it's not always floods and droughts and big, you know, change. It's just that the rain no longer comes when we expect it. And then a little rain comes and we plant, and then we get drought and the seed dies. And then you go to another part in Bolivia and you get a similar story. It's a changing way. So we're already working with these farmers to give them better meteorological data in the field where they are. You know, we're getting it through text messaging into a village and then posting around the village the information so that all the farmers can know. So we're already finding ways of adapting how they do farming and getting them information so they can change it to adapt to the climate change that's already happening, but really to stop it getting worse and worse and to a point where they can no longer be adapted. We need to stop that now, and that's where the urgency comes in.
You mentioned there Bolivia and Malawi, and Christian Aid has talked about what makes climate change such an injustice is the fact that small-scale farmers in developing countries haven't done anything to contribute to this global warming, that they're the ones that are actually suffering.
Yes, that is the fundamental sadness of climate change, is that we in the wealthy countries and in the emerging economies are getting wealthy and continually getting wealthy while we continue to use fossil fuel, whereas the poor farmers in Africa are feeling often the brunt of the change in the climate that's happening. And I think that's why we campaign in the UK, but also with our partners across the globe, to raise that injustice. And we're not saying that it's not everyone's responsibility to transform to a low-carbon economy, to act on it. But we do say that countries such as the UK, the US, Japan, countries who have grown wealthy on fossil fuels, that it is a responsibility there to finance both low-carbon development in poor countries, but also the adaptation needed, the changes to the farming techniques that are needed to make them resilient to climate change. So there is a responsibility for finance, for technology transfer to happen so that we can all evolve and change into this low-carbon, climate-resilient, global community. So that there is a responsibility to act together, but also a responsibility to help those most in need. And what we say in many of these countries who are still developing their economy, that they have a chance to leapfrog over the dirty technology. They don't need to take the high fossil fuel route now. If we can invest in them now, they can take the renewable and the energy efficiency routes. So we think there's a positive opportunity here, but it really needs to be taken.
Just one final question, Alison. Your organisation is Christian Aid. Therefore, what can Christians do? What can the Christian churches do to really have a voice in the debate?
I think this week with the IPCC report, it gives an opportunity, it raises this urgency question. It's really happening, it's really caused by us, we really need to take action now. And I think the churches ought to be standing up and making, they're not scientists, but they can interpret that scientist, the moral duty to respond to that for the current generation, but also for future generations. So there's a real moral issue, I think, in terms of that they can bring forward in this debate. It needs to be taken out of the scientific and into the real decision-making and the real sort of community. So I think there's a leadership element, but I also think there's a role for parishes to engage in their local area and look at how small changes there can... Okay, it's a small step, but if a number of parishes are doing it, they can lead the way at a local level to show what changes can be made within their community to go lower carbon, but also to support those, say, in energy poverty to have more efficient homes and to have more efficient items that they use so that they can afford their energy bills.